This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Keep up to date with all the latest news and events at Dunedin Public Libraries by listening to The Library Mix, from the latest exhibitions and displays to our free film screenings and public talks. The Library Mix keeps you informed. Dunedin Public Libraries, online at dunedinlibraries.govt.nz and on the air with The Library Mix on Otago Access Radio.
Kia ora and welcome to The Library Mix. My name is Jill Bowie and I don't want to freak anyone out, but this is my last show before Christmas. You know, I know everyone knows one of those people that, you know, is super annoying with Christmas things, and they get really excited and get their decorations out at the start of November. And I kind of have to confess, I'm sort of one of those people. I do get pretty excited when I see the shops full of Christmas decorations, and I love a Christmas jumper. I do try to keep my enthusiasm to a minimum, though, because after years of working in retail and growing up with parents who owned grocery stores and then a toy shop, I understand how stressful this time of the year can be for people. And a big shout out to those people who have to work while everyone else is out holidaying. And we do appreciate everything that you do to keep us going. So this week, I've been out visiting different places, and I started off on Friday with Mosgiel Library. I don't get out there very often. It's been ages since I've been out there. But it's such a nice place to be. You know, the library's so light, I kind of didn't want to leave. So I did sort of sit and do a bit of, I'll call it work, but it was kind of just enjoying the view outside. It's got some brilliant artworks out there. And in the children's space, there's some artworks by Ivan Hill. And I think sometimes we don't really pay attention to what's on the walls of our libraries, but we have some pretty impressive artworks in our collections. And earlier this year, New Zealand's first National Register of 20th Century Public Artworks went live. So Public Art Heritage Aotearoa New Zealand, or PAHANZ, is a research initiative based at Massey University. And it was established to try and find and document and protect what remains of New Zealand's 20th century public art. So Dr. Bronwyn Holloway-Smith is the co-director of the project. And she said that, sadly, many of our 20th century artworks had already been destroyed, so they've been hidden or just lost, while others remain undocumented and at risk due to the lack of public knowledge of their significance and cultural value. So through this initiative, they're hoping to change that. So Dr. Holloway-Smith and her co-director Sue Elliott have spent 6 years researching and documenting artworks with the aim of sharing their research to protect and promote them. So the artworks are sometimes hiding in plain sight or have been lost due to privatisation or fashion trends in architecture and interior design, so throughout the 21st century. So the register has been established to ensure future generations of New Zealanders have the knowledge and access to these treasures, which is such a brilliant idea. What, you know, it's so good to be able to be aware of what we hold, all the artists that we have works in our public spaces. So many well-known artists are listed on the website. So there's Rita Angus, John Bevan Ford, Russell Clark, Ralph Hawtorey, Molly McAllister, E. Mervyn Taylor, Dame Robin White and Cliff Whiting. So the ultimate goal is to build a comprehensive database of 20th century public artworks. So at the moment, there's over 380 works spread throughout the country, but this is just the start, and they've got another 900 works that need researching and accessing. So PHANZ will work with Heritage New Zealand and regional councils to gain heritage listings for works of national significance. And they're also looking at restoration and reinstallation of significant works that have been neglected or removed. And they also like to add plaques near works so people can be made aware of their importance. So PHANZ is seeking public's help to continue building that register and protecting these important artworks. So you can find the register at publicart.nz. So the public art is just one word. And they still want people to help contribute to these to this research. So, you know, you can get in touch with them if you know of a piece of public art that needs to be included. And yes, some of Dunedin Public Library's artworks are included in the list as well. So Colin McCann's Otago Peninsula painting, which was painted 1949. So it's up on the first floor of the City Library. So if you take the public lift, it's just right in front of you when you come out on the first floor. So the artwork was donated to the library by Rodney Kennedy in memory of Archie and Peggy Dunningham. So Archie was our second city librarian, and he and his wife Peggy were great supporters of local artists, and they held exhibitions and really promoted local art. So that's why we are lucky enough to have that beautiful artwork in our collection. And so students are still studying this painting as a landmark in the development of art in New Zealand. And it's just waiting, just at the City Library, for you to come and appreciate it. It's a spectacular piece. So now it must be time for a bit of a musical interlude. So here is Yellow Submarine from the Beatles.
In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea, and he told us of his life. In the land of submarines, so we sailed on to the sun, till we found a sea of green, and we lived beneath the waves, in our yellow submarine.
We all live in a yellow submarine, yellow submarine, yellow submarine.
And I have a special reason for playing that particular song. I recently took a trip to Middlemarch to visit with Dawn and Priscilla from the Middlemarch Museum. So they are gearing up for the celebration of the 150th anniversary of the launch of the Platypus submarine, which will be held on the 10th of December. So right next to the museum building is possibly one of the most unique objects held by an inland museum. They have the remains of a submarine there. So 80 kilometres from the nearest beach is a submarine, New Zealand's first and only submarine. So it is what remains of the Platypus. So the Platypus was designed by a French scientist and inventor, Antoine Prosper Payen. I'm probably saying that wrong. It was built in Dunedin by the Sparrow Engineering firm, and only a few were ever made. And the Middlemarch version is thought to be one of, if not the only, remaining example of those submarines in the world. So this one was a prototype for the gold rush era. The idea was to use a submersible to dredge gold from the bottom of the Clutha River. So there were two hatches, an entrance hatch on the top and another on the bottom for access to the riverbed. The paddle wheels propelled the 10.6-metre iron-plated craft, and they also ran onboard machinery designed to wash out the gold. Importantly, it also powered the air pumps, which controlled flotation and kept the crew alive, which is quite nice. So the initial success was followed by an aborted trial, and the Platypus was left lying on the wharf at Otago Harbour and kind of left for children to kind of play around in. Decades later, the submarine was cut into three parts. The front parts are what's left at Middlemarch, and the middle section was used by McLeod's soap factory, and then it sort of disappeared. It'd be hard to lose something that big, I would imagine, but apparently it's happened. So I found this fascinating article from Stuff from June 2021, written by Hamish McNally. So he talks with Peter Sparrow, who is chair of the Strathtyre Historical Society's Submarine Committee, and his grandfather was Joseph Sparrow, who's with his business partner William Thomas were behind the Otago Submarine Gold Mining Company. So the search for the missing middle section of the platypus has taken Peter on lots of wild goose chases across Otago. So the missing section was meant to be at McLeod's soap factory, which is on site before Cadbury's, which closed in March 2018. So the idea was that the gold-rich mud rock at the bottom of the river, the Clutha River, could be retrieved using a hatch at the bottom of the platypus, and the current was to turn the half-enclosed paddle wheels, which would operate the rudimentary machinery inside. So eventually the contraption was launched at the Rattray Street jetty and floated to Palaszczuk Bay, not far from where Forsyth Bar Stadium sits now. So it might not have been a giant voyage, but it was certainly not a pleasant one for the crew. So after about 2 hours underwater, the monster was brought to the surface, and the unfortunate crew released were more dead than alive, which was a bit grim. A report from the ODT about the launch on December 13th, 1873, said their four men, from their worn and tired appearance, had evidently had quite enough of it. And as one of them remarked, "I think I would rather be up in a balloon than pumping down there." So months later, the company was running low on cash, prompting some shareholders to be worried they were in too deep. But the directors remained confident that they would eventually be successful. And it said, an ODT article on December the 24th, 1873, noted one day the business will be owning many similar vehicles to be built out of the gold won by the first platypus. But unfortunately, it wasn't to be. So archival documents and old newspaper articles determined that there were four voyages of the platypus, with half of those deemed successful. So one of the unsuccessful voyages involved a note being floated from the submerged platypus, which warned, "We are prepared to meet our maker." So, yikes. One of those successful dives saw the platypus take 45 minutes to reach the bottom of Otago Harbour, where the crew of eight were able to open the bottom hatch and scoop up some keepsakes, including old fishing line and some shells. Water did not into the platypus due to the pressure pumped around the airtight ironclad submarine once various leaks had been sealed from earlier expeditions. Oh, freaks me out. The bold business sadly solely sunk, with Sparrow conceding that his relative had no real love for the project he called the monster. So the Submarine Gold Mining Company became insolvent in 1874, and the platypus was put up for auction and sold for the princely sum of £400 and stripped of its fitting, and it never went underwater again. But perhaps the biggest mystery is the lack of photos of the intact platypus, including during the launches or when it was just sort of sitting on Otago Harbour. So there's one photograph, but it's very, very grainy, just shows the large cylinder. So yes, but we'd love to see some photos, and so would Peter Sparrow, because, other than that, it just remains a mystery. So the platypus remained on the edge of Otago Harbour until 1924, and then it was relocated to make way for the New Zealand and South Seas International Exhibition, which opened a year later. So I will read a bit from the ODT article on the 24th of December 1873 in a second, but first we'll have a very appropriate song here. Here's Submarine Bells by The Chills.
Slower lights as dark sea grows, then far below lies softly glowing. Snow turns slowly into water. I know deep down hidden in you submarine bells chime. Golden groaning, sunlit tone, submerged sound.
And that was Submarine Bells by The Chills. Very appropriate as we're getting ready to celebrate the 150th anniversary of the launching of the Platypus submarine out at Middlemarch on the 10th of December. So there was an article written on the 24th of December 1873 in the Otago Daily Times about the submarine boat. So it says, the submarine gold mining company's undertaking has advanced a very material stage. Let us hope towards success. On the morning of the 13th, the queer-looking iron vessel that has for some time been building at the end of the Rattray Street jetty was committed to the deep and, contrary to the expectation of some people, not only floated, but floated right side uppermost. So that's nice, isn't it? His Honour, the superintendent, was president, as well as the director of the company and several of their lady friends. Amongst the latter was Miss Grant, who upon whom devolved the honour of christening the object on the morning's attentions. So the unwieldy-looking thing, having been raised upon launching ways, was well situated for inspection, and not a few of the spectators availed themselves of the opportunity to closely examine it, both inside and out. So they say it bore a close resemblance to a large steam boiler fitted with paddle boxes or wheels than to anything else. And it carries on to say, we have on former occasions informed our readers of the purpose for which it was constructed, working beds of the auriferous rivers where the current is strong and the water deep. And we also stated that the principle of the vessel was not a novel one, having been introduced in France by a clever Frenchman, Dr. Perrine, some 20 years ago. And so the Platypus is an iron cylinder built of 3/8 of an inch, I'm terrible with those kind of measurements, iron plates with a sharp snout, some 10 feet long. The total length of the cylinder is 35 feet and the diameter 7 feet by 2 inches. So it also goes on to describe the submarine in great detail, which I won't bore you with. The arrangement is very simple and, to all appearances, exceedingly effective. But this point can, of course, be demonstrated by actual practice only. Launching the craft proved an entire success, and ample preparations were made to give it a éclat. I don't know what that means. I'm assuming it's French because it's got an omelette-y thing. Gay flags and streamers decorated the mass of iron, and as we said before, eager was the concourse of people to witness the event. 10:30 was the time appointed, but delays in such cases are the rule. And that of the Platypus was no exception to it, for it was deemed expedient in the last moment to give her ballast to provide, which took some little time. Shortly after 11, however, the word ready was given, and the cradle blocks, having previously knocked out the other fasteners, were cut through by a couple of elders wielded by two sturdy shipwrights, and away went the Platypus, so named in the very charming manner by Miss Grant, the breaking of the orthodox bottle of number 2 not being omitted. A few venturous individuals were launched out with the craft, and loudly their cheers rang out when she took the water fairly and did not turn turtle, but on the contrary floated as buoyantly and as upright as a dish. So the assemblage on the shore also cheered, and so did the crew of the Peninsula, which steamer had been engaged to tow the Platypus to Stewart Street jetty, where it was to be finished off. So then they had some celebrations at the end, and unfortunately it wasn't to be a totally successful adventure, but, you know, a good one. So look out for the information about the celebrations on the 10th of December at Middlemarch. I just love those stories of Dunedin. It's just so, so quirky and brilliant. But a few years ago, I saw a tweet from someone who was asking people who had formerly worked in retail how long it took them to be able to listen to Christmas music again. And the average was about 10 years. And that's exactly how long it took me after years working in retail. So please spare a thought for those people forced to listen to music they might not choose to listen to at their workplaces over the Christmas period. And I'm kind of, this is kind of a bit of a warning for what I'm about to do to you. Also a warning for anyone who's trying to avoid a particular song for Whamageddon. This is your warning to maybe just turn the sound down in a second so you won't lose your Whamageddon game. So with that said, it's time for me to go. Don't forget to check out our digital archive, Scattered Seeds, if you feel like a little local history fix. Just type dunedin.recollect.co.nz into your browser and start exploring loads of images and stories from Dunedin's past, and click on the contact button contact us button if you have a story to share. So I'm off, and I'll see you in a few weeks' time. So here is Wham with Last Christmas.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.